For as long as I can remember, I've loved football slash soccer. The game I fell in love with was what soccer fans today might think of as a brutal sport, played in the British mud and rain with a soggy leather ball, in front of crowds of men and boys crammed into ancient, dangerous stadiums. I didn't know any different. I thought it was great. Then, once every 4 years, along came the World Cup.
Rivellino, what's Pelé now? What a beautiful goal for Pelé! El Rey Pelé! 100 goal for Brazil!
The World Cup was like finally watching TV in color. The mesmerizing Dutch, the dancing Brazilians, the dirty Argentines. We all bought into the cliches. But at the same time, we were exposed to one word, and then another, that eventually became a multilingual glossary. Catenaccio. Die Mannschaft. O jogo bonito. And that was just the start for many of us. Football's generous with its words, sharing them among languages, reversioning them, crowdsourcing them. Today, every fan is a polyglot. On The World in Words today, someone who knows more soccer words in more languages than anyone you're likely to meet. Tom Williams has a book out just in time for the World Cup. It's called Do You Speak Football? A glossary of football words and phrases from around the world. It started for Tom when he was working at the Agence France-Presse.
I think one of the things that appealed to me about the language of French football was the existence of so many terms that don't have an equivalent in English. And that was
like
a recurring
what?
Theme. Well, for example, I mean, there is a really straightforward football skill, soccer skill, that has no name in English. And it's when a player gets the ball, he has an opponent running towards him. So he knocks the ball past the opponent on one side and then runs around the other side to collect it.
Oh, yeah.
You see
I've tried and failed many times to do that.
You see it in almost every football match you ever watch. And in French, they call it un grand pont. A big bridge, and it's the sister term of their name for a nutmeg when you push the ball between an opponent's legs, which is known as a petit pont, a little bridge. So that's quite a nice little relationship within the French language. And then I found that there were terms for this skill move in other languages. So in Spanish, it's an autopass, like a self-pass, which is pretty self-explanatory. Mm. In Brazil, in Brazilian Portuguese, they call it a drible de vaca, which means a cow dribble. And the story there is supposedly that when amateur footballers were playing games on bits of scrubland and farmland, you having to circumnavigate passing bovines was an occupational hazard. And so that's the thinking behind where that term comes from. And we don't have a name for that in English. So I think that informed the desire to write about the language of French football, both just to celebrate it and also to use it to draw attention to all these, you know, skill moves and technical elements to the game that we've never really got round to naming in English.
Yeah, no, it's really good. And it also makes you realize that English isn't the be-all and end-all of this. Our glossary is incomplete.
Yes, there's a sense that in Britain, as the inventors of modern football, if you like, as the country that codified the sport and exported it around the world, we didn't see the need to give names to various elements of the sport. So the linguistic building blocks of football, if you like, remain British in origin. Football itself, soccer even, which is a corruption of association football, goal, offside, referee, free kick, penalty. And these words are used all around the world, the basic terminology of football, if you like. But then the slightly more elaborate language to do with skill moves, particularly. These were things that had to be invented somewhere else because it was other countries that played the sport with the requisite level of technical artistry, if you like, that enabled new skills to be invented. And as a result, we have these loan words in the English language. I mean, Rabona, which comes from Argentinian football, which is the skill whereby a player wraps his kicking foot behind his standing foot to kick the ball. And that's something that is quite widely referred to as Rabona in multiple different football countries. And that's why Rabona is now adopted by people speaking about football in English.
What is up, people? PWG here, and a lot of you guys have been asking for a Rabona tutorial. Today's your lucky day.
English is sort of creeping back into the conversation because it is the lingua franca of the online realm. And so now if somebody invents a new trick and uploads the footage on YouTube, or if, you know, you get these celebrity football freestylers, if they come up with a trick, it will inevitably be given an English name, or at least an English sounding name. So having spent the best part of a century not really adding much in the way of skill terminology, if you like, English is now doing that increasingly.
So even if they're not doing it on the field, they're doing it on the page.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that there are quite a lot of skills that only exist online. They only exist in YouTube football tutorials. There are skills so outlandish that no one dare actually try them in a match for fear of tying themselves in a complete knot. So you've got this entire linguistic column that is just waiting for the sport, the professional sport, to catch up with these freestylers and these street footballers who can come up with a trick, who can put it in a YouTube video, who can put it on Twitter and give it publicity, looking at where the language of football is going. I think that's something that we'll see come into play more and more.
So if you could, I'm going to ask you to predict one of those skills that we may see at the World Cup that suddenly will become extremely familiar with how it's described. But maybe right now, there's only very few people who know what it's called.
There are a few candidates. There's a trick called the mouse trap, and it was invented by a Dutch freestyler called Tuzani. He was one of the world's best-known freestylers.
Do a tutorial on the mouse trap.
Not entirely sure whether he came up with the name mouse trap, but that is what it became known as. And you can actually see the YouTube video where he sort of introduces it to the world. It was filmed on the streets of, I think he grew up in Rotterdam, and this is going back about 12 years or so, and he got friends to film him doing various freestyle tricks, and one of them was the mouse trap. And to perform a mouse trap, a player puts his foot on the top of the ball and then rolls the ball away from himself with his back heel, so rolls it away behind him. He then sort of reaches out with one of his feet, giving the impression that he's trying to fish the ball back, having miscontrolled it, deliberately misses the ball with his foot, and then stretches his foot out again, traps the ball and drags it back. Well, that probably sounds extremely complicated, and it looks fiendishly difficult, but I've seen it done in sort of five-a-side matches, indoor football, futsal. It's a really amusing trick to watch because it creates the impression that the player on the ball has attempted a trick and got it wrong. So inevitably, the closest defending player lurches in to try and win the ball back, at which point the guy sticks his foot out again and fishes the ball back and trots away. So that's one that I can see creeping into the professional game at some point.
I'm trying to imagine who might perform that and which defender might look really stupid defending it.
I mean, I can think of several candidates. It's the sort of thing that someone like Cristiano Ronaldo or Eden Hazard or Zlatan Ibrahimovic could probably pull off without too much difficulty. And I imagine that all defenders would be baffled by it if they'd not seen it before. So yeah, that's one to look out for.
Right, right. I also love the way that you cross-reference certain situations on the field. You can look up how a certain state of play is described from one language to the next. Like when there is a sort of chaotic moment of, I guess, usually defending, total disorganization. The Portuguese call it, and you're going to have to correct my pronunciation, andar aos papéis.
Yes, walking on papers.
Walking on papers. And then the British English will call it, borrowing from the Americans, keystone cops. Mm-hmm. And the Dutch say something completely unpronounceable, which means women and children first.
Vrouwen en kinderen eerst, I think, or something along those lines. That's one of my favourite terms in the book. You can just imagine a bit of pinball in a penalty area and a Dutch commentator saying, you know, in sort of mock dramatic tones, women and children first.
And then the Norwegians, for some reason, refer to this as Hawaii football. Why?
Yeah, I never really got to the bottom of that. I think the idea is, you know, Hawaii is a very sort of relaxed place. So perhaps people aren't quite as attentive as they should be. I'm not sure. But now that's one that I didn't really get to the bottom of.
Yeah, I get the feeling that like Norwegians basically don't go to Hawaii. I mean, it's about as far as you can get from Norway as possible. And maybe this is just some imagined, it's an imagined Hawaii. Either that or there are earthquakes and volcanoes going off all over the place.
Yes, I mean, yeah, it could be that. Yeah, that sort of makes sense.
I wonder which language will you be watching, will you choose for your commentary for matches?
Well, sadly, despite having spent so much time researching and writing about foreign languages, the only language that I speak properly is French, apart from English. So my plans will be to watch the matches in English. I might occasionally dip into French TV coverage to see how things are going there. But I'm hoping that the World Cup will be a good opportunity for me to talk to people about the different ways that different football cultures look at the sport and describe the sport. So hopefully, even if I'm still watching the same old boring English commentary, I'm hoping that I'll have opportunities to broaden people's linguistic horizons a little bit with some examples from the book.
No, absolutely, yeah. I must say, I quite like the idea of watching, say, you know, France against Senegal or against Belgium or something like that in French. That would be fun.
I mean, there's a lot to be said for watching football matches in the original commentary, even if you don't understand the language, just to get a sense of what those games sound like when they're watched in a different country. And I think also something that the internet and social media in particular has helped to do is to open people's ears to different forms of commentary from around the world. I mean, I'm thinking now when Egypt qualified for the World Cup, Mo Salah scored this impossibly dramatic penalty deep into stoppage time of their final qualifying match. And the Egyptian commentator, while he was calling the goal, actually broke down in tears.
Allah! 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 Allah!
And as he's sobbing into his microphone, the camera is panning around the stadium. And you realise that half the people there are in tears because Egypt have waited since 1990 to reach a World Cup, and they've finally done it in this heart-stopping fashion. So I suspect, thanks to social media, that if we do get any, you know, particularly memorable moments in the commentary on a game, even if it's not in English, that that'll be something that will be shared and that people get an opportunity to watch.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just wouldn't be the same just to watch them in English. Just on that subject, you know, with the US not in the World Cup, there have been calls, I think some of them a little bit in jest, for the US to support Mexico. You know, I wonder if there are any Mexican-Spanish terms that you recommend that we might learn so we can cheer on the Mexicans.
Well, there are some Spanish terms that are already in use in the language of American soccer. You think about things like en fuego, on fire, which I know is sort of dropped in commentary every now and again. Things like golazo, you know, which is the sort of default Latin American term for a spectacular strike or a spectacular goal. There's a great one in Mexico that I came across, which is when a team are laying siege to their opponent's goal and their opponents are defending deep and clinging on for dear life. You might describe it as throwing stones at the ranch. And I would attempt the Spanish pronunciation. That works as apedreando el rancho.
That is absolutely fantastic.
That's a Mexican one. And there's another one, actually, in fact, this refers back to what we were saying before about footballers giving their names to skill moves. There's the Cuatemiña, which was the invention of Cuauhtémoc Blanco, the great Mexican attacking midfielder. And he premiered this particular piece of skill at the 1998 World Cup in France. And it was the one that involved him grabbing the ball between his feet and then jumping with it between a couple of defenders. That was given various different names. I think it was called the frog jump in the UK, and in France they call it, no, I think in the UK they call it the bunny hop, and in France it was the saut de capot, the toad jump, and in Mexico they know that as the Cuatemiña. So it was a very sort of ungainly but also quite effective piece of skill. It's not something you see all that often, but if someone does pull it off, it's inevitable that Blanco's name will be mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Thank you very much, Tom. I tell you what, I mean, if one of these terms comes up, or if a completely, you know, something comes out of left field, which I suppose in a way is more likely, just something that totally unpredictable, we'll give you a call back and see what you think about how some piece of skill is being interpreted in other languages.
No, please do. I'll be more than happy to. And it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Tom Williams. His new book is Do You Speak Football? A glossary of football words and phrases from around the world. Thanks today to Tina Toby, Lauren Rothering, and Mike Wilkins. Also, William Troop, because Calcio. The World Cup is incomplete without the Azzurri. Do us a favor and leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Do it at halftime. What else is there to do at halftime? Okay, after you've powdered your nose and put on the kettle, but do it. Reviews are our lifeblood. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.